10:03 on a Bud Light Football Friday here on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan, your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Sandy Clef with you. A Bud Light Football Friday here on The Fan. Bud Light, the official beer sponsor of the NFL. Here we go with our friend Chad Brown, who joins us every Monday and Friday at this very hour, at this very minute, right here on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. And he's with us right now on the Sport Clips MVP Hotline. Chad Brown is presented, of course, every Monday and Friday here by Juicy Burgers and Dogs. Chad, good morning. Talking a lot about the Broncos and Cowboys on a couple of levels here for Sunday, both in terms of the threat that the Cowboys pose to the Broncos. We'll start with that. How serious a threat are the Cowboys to the Broncos' undefeated standing come Sunday?
I think it's a pretty good statistic when the Cowboys get the ball to DeMarco more than 20 times a game. I think they win, was it like 80% of those games, something like that. So I think that's perhaps the biggest threat. And in my mind, the only real way the Cowboys can be in this game is to run the ball, keep Peyton Manning, the Broncos' offense off the field. Having said that, I don't think it's going to happen, but I think that's the only way it could happen.
The Bronco defense is strong, it would seem, through 4 weeks, Chad, particularly against the run. Rushing yards per game, Denver is number one defensively in the league. Rushing yards per attempt, number four in the league. It's against the pass that Denver is a little more vulnerable. You made the same point that others have made during the week and already this morning about the Cowboys and that record. I think it's the last 10 games, at least, that Murray has carried the ball 20 times or more. The Cowboys are 10-0. But isn't that strength against strength? The Broncos have been terrific with the two defensive tackles, Vickerson and Knighton, against the run so far this year.
But outside of those two big guys up front, I don't think the rest of their defense is really built to be a run-stopping defense. And early in the season, we kind of downplay what the Broncos' defense would be able to do without Von Miller. And how would they rush the quarterback? Well, they've proven they can get over that. They felt even disrespected the fact that people were saying, well, who's going to rush the quarterback
right,
if you don't have any Von Miller?
Right.
So are they going to feel disrespected by this talk that they're not built to stop the run? And
yeah,
number one, run defense ranking is only because they're offensive ahead. Well, if I were in that locker room, I certainly would. So I can understand if they feel that way. But again, you know, let's talk about Wesley Woodyard. Is he physically suited to be a run-stopping middle linebacker? No, he's not. But it doesn't mean that he's incapable of that. So just looking at this defense, that's the one thing that I see is an issue, is they're not built to do this. They remind me of those Colts defenses when Peyton Manning – was doing well with the Colts.
Right.
Faster, smaller guys.
Yep.
And we've seen them fly all over the field. They do a fantastic job of that. If they haven't come across an offense yet that is disciplined and patient enough to just keep running the ball, because they've been behind, particularly so early in the game.
Chad, how good a linebacker is Wesley Woodyard right now?
Oh, he is fantastic. I play with a number of guys who have been undrafted, as he was. And those guys, they tend to play with a chip on their shoulder, and their preparation and their, you know, for lack of a better word, professionalism about the game tends to stay with them their entire career. So just as he was busting his butt just to make the team, I think if you still continue with that same mindset now that you've made the team, that turns you into a guy who should have made the Pro Bowl last year and will most likely make the Pro Bowl this year. He is clearly the leader of the Broncos defense. You know, when Champ Bailey comes back, obviously he's got lots of Pro Bowls. And Von will come back and make his explosion plays and his sacks. But I don't think there's any doubt that the leader of the Broncos defense is Wesley Woodyard. And he's perhaps the most important piece of that defense because of what he brings play-wise, but also getting guys lined up in that leadership role as well.
Are you surprised at how well Denver's been able to function, not only without Von Miller, but without Champ Bailey? And from the sounds of it, Champ isn't going to be quite ready to go on Sunday either. Is there a point, and might that point come this Sunday, where somebody like Dallas is going to be able to exploit the absence of both Miller and Bailey?
You know, if you would have told me going into the season the Broncos would be 4-0 and everyone would be saying they are clearly, with arguments about Seattle, the best team in football, and you're missing three of your five top players, you know, Ryan Clady, Von Miller, and, yeah. and Champ Bailey, you know, I think we all would have said that's impossible. How that's not just not going to happen. But they're managing to get it done. So is this the week where they get exposed some way or another? I don't know. I anticipate that happening at some point during the season, and it's very hard once you've been exposed during the NFL season to fix what everyone is beginning to exploit. So I'm rooting for the Broncos. I want them to be successful. I'm hoping this is not the week. And again, I'm not seeing any real glaring holes for another team to exploit anyway.
Bill Polian said in a USA Today piece that came out today on Peyton Manning and the Bronco offense, he said, the only thing that worries me is the injury to Clady and that somebody will be able to take advantage of Chris Clark at some point. But I thought Chris Clark had the best quote in the piece when he said about protecting Manning. He said, before too long, you can see the desperation on the other side of the line of scrimmage, just trying to get there. I thought that's a very revealing quote, and it seems like by the middle of the third quarter in just about every game the Broncos have played so far, you've seen not only desperation, but you've seen some give up on the part of opposing defenses.
Yeah, as a pass rusher, you can only, you know, get down your stance and think, you know, I'm going to get my get off, I'm going to work my best move, and you can get your best get off. And you can work your best move, and maybe you happen to get around or get inside Chris over there at the tackle spot, and Peyton Manning still gets rid of the ball. And that begins to get frustrating. And for, you know, pass rushers who, you know, typically get home in those situations and you've beaten this guy 10 times but you're still unable to get the sack, it's inevitable that frustration comes in. But going back to the Chris Clark thing, perhaps more than any player on the Broncos squad, he was best prepared to move into a starting role because he was the starter pretty much all offseason while Ryan Clady was out with a shoulder injury. So, again, it's another one of those things where we in the media, you know, Ryan Clady's out, the sky is falling. But the guy who's stepping in spent more time in that spot than Ryan Clady has in the last 6 months.
All right, so your bottom line is that, and we all know, we've talked about this today, that all five of the undefeated teams are going on the road this week. Do you think Denver is the least vulnerable of those five, or are we taking this game too lightly?
The Cowboys are a pretty good team, but are they on the Broncos level? No, they're not. You know, but of course it's NFL football and all the cliches of any given Sunday, and that's why they play the game and all that stuff. That still really applies. But these two teams line up 10 times. I've got trouble imagining scenarios where the Cowboys could find a way to win two of them, much less this Sunday. The Cowboys are trying to replace some guys on defense. They're unhappy with, you know, some of their defensive backs. So,
yeah, Claiborne in particular, they're unhappy with him.
Right. So that plays into the Broncos' success again this Sunday. I can see how the Cowboys can win the game, but at the same time, I would be shocked if they do find a way to win the game. It would take some tremendous mistakes and some, you know, I don't think the weather's going to be an issue down there. But, again, outside of the weather, I have a hard time imagining what could really derail the Broncos. Again, as I talked about earlier in the call here, at some point, some part of the offense or defense is going to get exposed.
Yeah.
But at this point, you know, it hasn't happened yet, and I don't think the Cowboys are the team that are going to do the exposing.
All right, Chad, it's been a pleasure, but I'm curious to know, we talk about the Broncos being invulnerable. How well is the Chad Brown, you talk about guaranteed success, how well is the Chad Brown Buffalo Charburger doing this week?
It is good. You know, I stopped by a Juicy Burger the other day, had one of those, sat down at lunch.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I first got my Nike contract, I was excited to be a Nike guy.
Yeah.
It took about 10 years before Nike started doing personal shoes for me with my number.
Right.
They did some snake logos and cool stuff like that. But this is the first time I've ever had a food item, a burger named after me, and it's actually good. It's not some crappy burger. The Chad Brown Buffalo Char Burger is awesome. It is awesome. I recommend you go get it.
All right, Chad Brown is presented by Juicy Burgers and Dogs, the juiciest, tastiest char-broiled burger in town, especially the Chad Brown version. See why they were voted best burger in Denver by Westward in 2012. Juicy Burgers and Dogs, always fresh, always juicy, and always convenient to get to, right, Chad? Especially
yes,
for us here in Greenwood Village.
Just south of Arapahoe on Yosemite, right by I-25. Super close, super easy, super convenient. Stop by for lunch.
All right, Chad, it's been a pleasure. We'll talk to you Monday.
All right, thanks, Danny.
Appreciate it. That's the great Chad Brown joining us here every Monday and Friday. This, of course, a Bud Light Football Friday on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Stay with us.
Broncos, Sunday, how do you see it?
Oh, they're gonna win by a lot. I mean, it's Peyton Manning. We're done here.
Now that's Michael Schotte from Bleacher Report. Short, concise, to the point. And that's where we are with the Broncos right now. Until, and we got a text to the same effect as Clef Talk continues. Sandy Clef with you on a Bud Light Football Friday, your home for the best live and local coverage. The Broncos and the NFL, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3. The fan lines open 303-228-1043-295-88. On the Total Beverage text line from the 720, there's just no evidence to suggest that the Broncos will do anything but blow the Cowboys out on Sunday. You can take it to the bank this week, and we'll be no different from any of the first four. From the 720, until a team proves that it can hang with the Broncos in the second half, I'm going to fully expect a Broncos blowout every single week. From the 520, I heard that every night before the game, every Saturday night, the team watches the Ravens game for motivation. On the other side, from the 978, the Patriots are ruling the AFC without their team in place. Okay? Not only that their win is much more impressive, I guess the most recent one against Atlanta last Sunday night is what the texter is referring to. Not only was their most recent win, I'll clean up his texter a little bit. Not only is their most recent win much more impressive than the Broncos, but the two teams play in New England in November. Can't wait to rock your world. Your show is a joke. LOL. Well, during this joke of a show, during the course of the week, we have cited any number, several in fact, national analysts who through various means have taken it upon themselves to place the Broncos, as they have the Seahawks within the confines of the NFC, apart from everybody else, based not only on the 11 games they won last year in succession, but on the four games they won at the start of this year and the way they have won the four games, by an average of 22 points per game. And on this level, if you go inside the numbers and project win totals for teams based on point differential at any point in the season, there's a pretty big body of work to go back and examine among, I believe, as many as 66 4-0 teams from 1990 through 2012. That's a fairly large sample size. And to take a look at those teams and conclude that all of them placed together average out to win about 61% of their remaining games. So the tendency is to cool off. However, if you have not only a 4-0 record, but you're winning by 22 points per game, you're plus 88 after four games, your projected win total tends to be about three games north of the team that also might have the same 4-0 record and has won, as the Patriots have this year so far, by an average of 8 points per game. I think what you can say about the Patriots is that two of their four wins have been very impressive, perhaps most impressive, their win most recently over Atlanta last Sunday night. What people are saying right now about the Patriots, though, and I assume as a Patriot fan that the texter would be aware of this, is that with the loss of Vince Wilfork, yes, they've lost other guys. They've lost Amendola. They've lost Gronkowski. They lost during the offseason Wes Welker. And for reasons well documented and generally understood, with Aaron Hernandez out, they've lost a key player as well. They have been able to make up for some of those offensive absences, some of those key players from offense, because they still have the guy who's delivering the ball in Tom Brady, the most important guy on offense. For a lot of people who follow the Patriots, maybe the texter agrees with this, maybe he doesn't, Vince Wilfork has for years been not only their best defensive player, but their most valuable and indispensable defensive player. I haven't read anyone this week or heard from anyone who has suggested that they will simply roll ahead without Wilfork and not miss a beat. It's a devastating blow. If he isn't irreplaceable, he definitely on this team is constituted right now would seem to be pretty close to irreplaceable. There's nobody remotely like him on the defense. They can develop receivers who can do maybe some of the same things for Brady that their predecessors did. Having that ability on the defensive side to so easily replace Vince Wilfork is another deal. But there are a lot of numbers you can look at, a lot of trends going back almost a quarter century in this game where, yes, there is some weight to not only the Broncos being 4-0, but to their winning in the fashion that they're winning. And again, I would point to the very fine piece in USA Today on page 8 this morning, in the sports section, page 8C, entitled Manning Defying Logic. And I think it captures very well the essence of what the Broncos have done through the first four games, documenting, I think, the very persuasive argument now that Manning is playing as well as he's ever played. And this offense, certainly since the NFL-AFL merger, which led to the first year back in 1970 of conference play, NFC and AFC, there hasn't been even a team remotely close to Denver, within 4 points of Denver in terms of margin and total scoring through the first four games of the season. Yes, what they're doing is historic, very impressive. Is it a guarantee of a championship? No, but 5-2 odds, our friends from Bovada released this week, 5-2 Super Bowl winning odds on the Broncos at this point. Tell me the last time a team through four games had odds as favorable as that. These are objective numbers. This isn't just hogwash local talk show hosts or commentators throwing this stuff out. It's documented. It doesn't come with a money-back guarantee, but it's pretty persuasive, at least for the reasonable-minded among us. Speaking of that, Dr. Rick Perea is set to join us here in just a few moments. Sports psychologist, Metro State University of Colorado, as we continue on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Can't you see?
It is 10:32 on a Bud Light Football Friday on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan, your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. And joining us now in studio, as he does on a semi-regular basis, particularly during the football season, Dr. Rick Perea, professor of sports psychology, Metro State University of Colorado. We'll get to the football because there's a lot to get to on this football Friday morning. But I got to ask you about Patrick Roy. What was your reaction the other night?
Yeah.
Especially during the final minute.
Yeah. I think it was a move that was laced with psychology. I think that, you know, him coming back to this team, number one, has been a big shot in the arm for the Avalanche,
right,
in terms of the fan base, the energy, the passion that he brought as a player, now as a coach. I think it was a message. Now, I'm not saying it was calculated, but I think it was an opportunity for him to really show the fans of Denver that he really is connected and involved with this team on the highest level. And what I mean by that is that it's not just a position for him to try out and kind of, you know, work his way through. He's emotionally committed to this team, and I think by really taking a stand and standing up for his players in that context, he really sent a strong message to not only the fan base, but his own team, his own players, that kind of look back and say, whoa, okay, here we got a guy that not only, you know, is our teacher, our coach, our instructor, our mentor, but somebody who's emotionally connected to our objectives and goals on the ice.
And when he is fined yesterday and both accepts the rationale behind the fine but doesn't back off or apologize for the action he took, what message does that send to his constituency, whether it be fans or players in the room?
Right. I just think it further solidifies his connection to this organization and his commitment to this organization. I mean, he obviously, the way he conducted himself as a player in this city for many years showed his passion he has for the game of hockey. But now in this position he's in, again, he's more of a coach, he's more of a mentor, a teacher. He's really shown that that passion really doesn't change. The context does, but the passion doesn't. And I think it sends a strong message that, you know what, we may not be a great team this year. It's hard to say quantitatively how productive they'll be. But what he is saying is we will be engaged, we will be connected emotionally, and I got your back. I'm here as the coach, not only as a figurehead, but I am entrenched in the goals and objectives of the Avalanche going forward.
All right. Speaking of teams that seem to be emotionally connected, firing on all cylinders, the epitome of cohesiveness, we have the Denver Broncos for the first month of the season. And we're hearing all the talk this week, whether it's speculative or the subject of much research going back into the annals of NFL history and Bronco history about all these things that the Broncos have accomplished. But your perspective, I suspect, is a little bit different from simply going back and crunching a lot of numbers and reaching conclusions about how powerful the Broncos are as a team, and particularly how powerful and even unstoppable they seem on the offensive side.
Right. Yeah, you know, Sandy, one of the things we look at in sports psychology is we analyze why people perform at peak levels or they do not perform at peak levels. And so when you look at the, you know, 2013 edition of the Denver Broncos, one has to ask themselves after four games, how are they maintaining such a high level of peak performance? And so one of the things we look at is team cohesiveness. And there's two basic levels we look at is task cohesiveness and social cohesiveness. Now, task cohesiveness is that element of, you know, for example, on the defense, do the defensive line take care of their gap responsibilities? The linebackers have their gap responsibilities. Defensive backs, adhering to their coverage responsibilities in a particular call or in a particular series. If you take care of your task, there's a certain cohesiveness that is built. On the offensive side, same thing. Offense is assignment football. When you break the huddle, you have a basic assignment that you know you have to do. There may be variations off the play calls or the audibles, but you basically have a task. If you accomplish those tasks, that builds cohesion in your team. On the other level, you have social cohesion. You know, you hear people talk about it's a great locker room. You know, they're very cohesive in that locker room. That's what we call social cohesion. Now, interestingly, if you take care of task cohesion, that wealth fuels the social cohesion. You know, a winning team is usually a happy locker room. So those two are really interconnected or interdependent. And I think that's what you see right now is a highly cohesive unit based on task cohesion from all the offense and the defensive players. And that's leading to that social cohesion, which makes for a good and strong and functional locker room.
I want to ask you about something that Orlando Franklin discussed with us this week, this idea that the Broncos on offense meet each and every Monday, I guess it usually is. Maybe it's an hour, maybe it's 2 hours. No coaches in the room. They go over the game in exquisite detail. With Peyton Manning running the meeting, you wouldn't expect anything else. And I asked Orlando Franklin about it, and he said, I hate those meetings. Because players are called upon individually to critique themselves.
Right.
And if they don't step up and do that, Manning will run the play back again and again and again until the guilty party steps up and says, I was wrong in that play. That was my mistake. Correctly identifies himself. And Franklin says, I hate all that, but I understand how important it is that we do that. It's a fundamental and very important exercise. And we also hear, and we had a text to this effect a few minutes before you sat down, that each and every Saturday night, I don't know if it's the whole team or just the defense, they look at the Ravens game last January 12th just to keep themselves grounded. What do you think of those two exercises?
Well, the first one you mentioned about the group getting together and sitting down and kind of qualitatively looking at their performance. Because, I mean, essentially the score is the quantitative assessment, right? Yep. And the qualitative piece is watching tape and really kind of critiquing themselves. I think that's very important. I think for a team to be able to sit down and really kind of objectively look at each other's performance and hold each other accountable, I think is very functional. The one thing I would say to be, that the team has to be very careful of is that there's some equity in those meetings, because you know you don't want particular people taking the blame for example, when a quarterback throws a pick, most people assume it's the quarterback's fault. Well, oftentimes it's not. I mean, oftentimes a receiver will break off a route, there'll be a coverage, and there'll be a different call that the receiver doesn't get. So there's really a lot of variable and moving parts. So as long as you know there's no coaches in there to facilitate it, I just would like to make sure that the you know more players aren't taking the brunt of what's going on the wrong side than what needs to be. I think Peyton Manning has enough years under his belt that he's basically a coach within the team.
Exactly.
And so he facilitates this, and it probably works out real well. I think what Orlando Franklin's talking about, that he hates it, is that there's a whole nother level of accountability there. And what you have there is also that social cohesive piece. When they come out of that meeting, they understand that everyone supports each other. Hey, we're going to call you on what you don't do right, but at the same time, we support you, and we got your back.
303-228-1043, 295-88 on the Total Beverage text line. Quickly before we break, long piece in USA Today this morning on Peyton Manning and the Bronco offense through four games. And there's a terrific quote in here from Chris Clark, the new left tackle, where he says, in terms of pass protection, as the game wears on, you see the desperation just trying to get there. From a psychological point of view, it does seem like, looking at each and every one of the Broncos' first four games, that sometime during the third quarter, whether it's desperation, exhaustion, a sense that you know what we're doing is an exercise in futility, the other team, the defense, gives up, stops playing. When Clark talks about that, makes that observation, I look across during the course of the game, and at some point I see desperation. In terms of they're trying to get to Manning, that they can't do it, and they become desperate.
Right.
How valuable is that?
That's very valuable, because essentially he's talking about the opposite of cohesion. Okay, he's talking about the other team is not really cohesive. They're looking at each other.
Almost dysfunctional.
Dysfunctional to the level that they're looking beyond their tasks on a given, their gap responsibilities, what they're supposed to do on any given play. And then again, that leads to that what we call cognitive dissonance, and that's the thinking part, the imbalance of thinking on the field that people feel. And when you have cognitive dissonance on the field, defenses will literally come apart psychologically. So that look in the face is that nonverbal communication that defensive players get in their eyes when they're really not under, you know, being able to contest an offense effectively. That's part of that, what we call cognitive dissonance, where they start to feel a real imbalance and they start going beyond what their task really calls for them to do. And then that's where you have broken plays, people not taking care of their gap responsibilities, and then a big run is broke, or coverages. People say, you know, I'm going to jump this route, and it's not there, and then there you go. There's a big play. So that happens when teams start to become broken down from a cognitive perspective.
And it's much more psychological than it is physical.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you can figure altitude into that at some point, but it's mainly psychological. Even here in the altitude, it's mainly psychological, that kind of breakdown you're talking about.
All these guys are physically capable, Sandy. They are just physically the best athletes in the world. they're capable of that. It's the psychological cognitive dissonance that really begins the breakdown of the physiological piece.
All right. We'll come back a little bit more with Dr. Rick Perea as we take you through this Football Friday morning, a Bud Light Football Friday on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. Stay with us. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan on a Bud Light Football Friday. Your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Sandy Clef with you, and we'll continue on the phones and on the Total Beverage text line. A few more moments with Dr. Rick Perea, professor of sports psychology, Metro State, and the University of Colorado. A couple of texts I want to get your impressions on these sentiments. From the 303, as an organizational effectiveness professional, I find it very refreshing that you guys are talking about the Broncos in terms of what I do for a living. Nice to see that these principles apply in the professional sports world as well as the corporate world, a point you've made frequently.
Oh, yeah. Organizations are organizations. And the Broncos, the Nuggets, the Rockies.
Avalanche,
the CU football team, they're all organizations. And so when we look at professional teams, college teams, high school teams, we approach it from the organizational level.
Tell us a little bit. Let's get to this one, too, because I didn't want to pass this one over. From the 303, regarding the showing of the Ravens playoff game, which we spoke to in the last segment, I've read that repeated showing of negative examples does not improve behavior, just the opposite, better to show positive examples.
Yes. Yeah, theoretically, that's true. But sometimes in the real world, theory doesn't preach out. I mean, here's an example. While you may paint that picture as negative, that they lost to the Ravens, you can also frame it as very positive. Okay, you can look at it from the sense that they really had won.
We had a 99% chance to win the game with a minute to go.
They really had won.
That's positive.
Had that game won, and then they just made a few snafus on the last play there to make that completion available or really functional. But you can frame that as a positive experience that we're going to learn from this. It's not necessarily negative reinforcement. You can also frame it as positive reinforcement by breaking it down to different elements of the defense and the offense and that what could have been done. And then also point out the positive things that happened in that game. There are very many positive things that happened in that game. It was just the quantitative outcome that really wasn't to the pleasure of the fans and the Broncos.
Help us out in understanding Broncos psychology, which seems to be centered on diminishing any talk of records. Manning won't talk about it, although he did acknowledge with a bit of a smirk the other day, yes, I do set goals before every season begins, and I'm making fairly healthy progress on realizing my goals so far. But whether it's John Fox, either of the coordinators, Peyton Manning, Champ Bailey, but particularly the coaches, I find they don't want to enter into discussions about record setting, the pace they're on.
Yeah. And I think that's really...
Is that healthy or unhealthy?
I think it's very healthy because basically there's two different levels of goals we use in sports psychology, and that's process goals and outcome goals. And really the process goals are what they're functioning on. The individual, the day-to-day process goals of getting better, working on technique, working on task cohesion, all those things are really the most important thing. The outcome goals will take care of themselves. And I think that's what Manning, Fox, and et al. Are doing over there is making sure that, hey... Our process goals are the things we do every day to be the best we can be. The outcome goals will take care of themselves. See, winning is a symptom of taking care of the day-to-day things that, are the process goals. Technique, stance, alignment, all those things, scheme. That will lead to an outcome goal, which is the quantitative end of a game and then score. And I think that's really healthy for them to approach it from a process level and not an outcome perspective.
But there is the quantitative analysis, all the historical trends being researched, and we spoke about them right before we brought you on. Not only are the Broncos 4-0, I mean, there have been 65 other teams, I think, 4-0 going back to 1990, but it's the point differential. It's the volume of points they're scoring that seems to stand out, and the projections that they'll win. If you're outscoring the opposition by 22 points a game in the first month, you'll be expected to win three more games by the end of the year than a team with the same record, but only with an 8-point differential. That's quantitative.
Right.
Is there any – and that seems to be what the Broncos are trying to push to the outside.
Sure.
Not deal with.
Right.
But there's value, isn't there, in identifying those – hey, we're doing really, really well.
Right.
And if we keep to our program, our process, the percentages say the rewards will be considerable down the road.
Yes. And again, it's the ability to keep focus of the process orientation versus the outcome.
And differentiate between the process and the outcome.
Yeah, absolutely differentiate on a day-to-day, hour-by-hour basis in practice. I mean, coaches, position coaches, coordinators, the head coach need to really outline to their players, there's objectives within the process, there's objectives within the outcome. It's really not their job on a daily basis to talk about winning. You know, many times on this show I've talked about Nick Saban. You can hang around the Alabama program for 2 weeks and never hear the word win. You won't hear that word.
No.
It's a process. And I think the Broncos are doing a great job in terms of emphasizing the process. And that keeps the players focused. That's the meetings we talked about with Orlando Franklin. It's about the daily systems that they have going on in terms of offense and defensive accountability with Del Rio.
Yeah.
Gap responsibilities, all that stuff that keeps them in the process level instead of the outcome.
Quick question before we break at the top of the hour from the 720. Dr. Rick, my question regards even someone like Peyton Manning, so meticulous, obviously successful as he's been, but does that playoff record enter his mind now over the next few months and provide any kind of hindrance?
Well, if he's a human organism, it does. Okay, let's be honest. There'll be at some point.
There's always a yeah, but with Manning.
Yeah.
Even doing what he's doing now. Yeah, but 9-11 in the playoffs.
Right. But I think what the favorite part that I look at with Peyton Manning is he's with a new team. You know, he's just been with this team a year and a half now, not even a year and a half. And I think going into the playoffs, the way he frames things from a really positive and process level, I think he'll be all right with that. Will he think about it? Yes. I mean, you can't be human and not think about it. But I think, honestly, when he approaches each game, it's from a process perspective. And so going into the playoffs, I think he'll really approach it from that level. And I would expect Denver to have much different results this year based on that. The only thing that concerns me is there's going to be some ebbs and flows in any football season.
Absolutely.
And I just wonder when that's going to come and what that's going to look like for Denver, because to really operate on such a high level of peak performance is really unprecedented, and they're not going to win by 22 points a game the rest of the season, I can guarantee
you
that.
That's not how the last three Super Bowl champions did
right.
it, as you've frequently noted here, going back to Packers, Giants 2 years ago, and Ravens last year. Ravens lost four of the last five going into the playoffs,
right.
but found that cohesion you've been talking about
right.
once the playoffs began. A few more moments with Dr. Rick Perea on the other side of the break here at the top of the hour. Sandy Clef with you. It's a Bud Light Football Friday on Denver Sports Station, your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Stay with us.